and welcome to series two of the Keep Running podcast with me, Rachel Stringer.
And me, Amana Rai. This is a running podcast for runners of all abilities who want that extra bit of motivation for their next run. In series one, we spoke to so many inspiring runners from all walks of life.
The ultra-running legend himself, Dean Karnassus, Great Britain's second fastest female marathon runner, Mari Yamauchi, running influencer Flora Beverly, and founder of global run club Midnight Runners, Jodie Bragger, were just a few of the great guests who joined us in helping to give you the inspiration that you need for your next run, or that little pick-me-up when you're having one of those days.
All episodes from Series 1 can be listened to if you miss them. We're on all good podcast apps.
We are so excited to be bringing you so many more diverse guests in series two and really hope you enjoy listening to them on your next run.
If you do enjoy listening to the pod, then we'd really appreciate it if you would subscribe and share with your friends and use the hashtag #KeepRunningPod to join in with the community.
We can't wait for you to join us on this season two journey and keep running with us.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Keep Running podcast. Before we get to the episode, we just want to let you know that we recorded this towards the end of 2020. So if some of the dates seem a little bit out of sync, that's why.
So today's guest is joining us from over 11,000 miles away.
She is a Kiwi whose running journey has spanned over 20 years.
From starting as a youngster in athletics at the age of 7 to going on to wear the national silver fern kit.
She boasts personal best times of 15:42 in the 5K to 2:38 in the marathon.
Our guest not only has been running her whole life, but is now on a mission to inspire others to run too in her role as a run coach. She is also a Nike Pacific run coach and the founder of Femi.
Not only is she super fast, but her Instagram is also on point too. We are so pleased to welcome, all the way from New Zealand, Lydia O'Donnell. Welcome, Lydia, to the Keep Running podcast.
Wow, thank you so much, team. That was probably the best intro I've ever had. Thank you. I'm overwhelmed. It's great to be here.
You're very welcome. We loved having a little research into you and about your story. We can't wait to chat more about it, but quickly set the scene for us. You're now in New Zealand. What kind of time of day is it? What's the weather like? How are you doing?
Yeah, so I've been in New Zealand now for, I think, just over 3.5 weeks. So I have been living in Melbourne, Australia for the last just over a year. But I did come home to see my family after being so restricted over in Melbourne. It's nice to kind of come home back to NZ and see mum and dad. I am based in a place called Tauranga, which is usually quite nice and sunny, but today it's a bit overcast. It's 10 a.m. I have been out for my track session this morning. I did 5x2K on the track, so it's nice to kind of sit down and let the legs rest now.
Oh, and I'm so pleased to hear that you're back with your family. That must be so lovely. Lydia, we start all of our podcasts with five quick questions, which we will go through with you. And the first question we have for you then is, why do you run?
Oh, this is such a long question. Do we have a whole podcast for this one? I guess for me, running is something that I've had as a tool ever since I was a small, you know, when I was a young athlete, running was part of my life. And it's something that I use to, I guess, give myself a purpose in life. I think growing up, I was quite a competitive child. So I probably ran more than to, you know, get placings and times and be the best athlete I can be. And I guess I still do that now, but I put a lot more emphasis on why I run is to feel good about myself and to, I guess, have a really healthy mental health as well. So running is a tool for me, and I think it's the most accessible tool for pretty much anybody to use to beat anxiety and depression. And for me, running is that kind of tool that creates a purpose, gives me confidence and gives me power in myself. So yeah, I love running for many reasons, but I think it selfishly comes down to how I feel.
Absolutely, yeah, for sure. I think a lot of people would agree with you, and a lot of our listeners would as well. Our second kind of quick fire whet the appetite question is, your greatest running achievement to date?
I think for a lot of people, They would probably focus on like their highest placings or maybe their personal best times. But for me, the greatest achievement, I think the best I've ever felt in a race as such is probably finishing my first marathon. So I ran the Melbourne Marathon when I was 26, I think it was, 2016. And I kind of went into that race with no expectation, no idea how I was going to feel or what time I was going to run or what pace I should be holding. I just went in there with a really open mind, and coming through that finish line and I actually placed second, like was very surprised to place so high up. I was just so proud of myself. So it wasn't really the placing or the time that I ran. It was more just like completing a marathon. It's such a long way and such a huge distance to cover. So anybody that completes a marathon should be so proud of themselves. And I think that was definitely probably the most memorable race I've ever had.
I totally agree with that. And I think nothing beats your first marathon, nothing. Our next question is the best piece of advice you have been given during your running career or that you have given?
This piece of advice I definitely was given when I was younger and is something that I try to stay true to now when I'm coaching younger athletes. I was told when I was young, I was, as I said, I was super competitive. So I always wanted to be the best, but I had an amazing coach when I was at high school who really told me to be patient with my running and that nobody remembers a young athlete. And I just remember those words so clearly because at that time I wanted to be the best in my school and I wanted to be best in my country. And I had these big ambitions to prove myself when I was out racing. But having her coach me and having her words of nobody remembers a young athlete in the back of my mind, I did hold myself back and she held myself back. So it really helped. I'm pretty positive if she hadn't told me that or was my coach when I was younger, I probably still wouldn't be running now because I would have pushed myself too hard as a young athlete. And I guess you see it time and time again as these teenagers, they overtrain because they want to be on podiums at such a young age. But whether it pays or not off or not, I'm not too sure, because I'd rather be competing and running well now, to be honest, than I was, 15 years ago. So it's something when I'm working with young athletes, and I'm just like, just wait till you're older when your body can actually, withstand the training. It's a lot more sustainable and the results matter a lot more. So that's definitely the advice I try to give on to my athletes now.
Yeah, I agree with that actually, because I kind of trained a lot when I was younger and my coach used to say the exact same thing, like patience, Rachel, patience, but I don't think I particularly took it on board. I still run now, but nowhere near the level that you do. So I wish actually, again, you maybe were a part of my coaching setup when I was younger, because maybe I'd still be competitive right now. But moving on, Lydia, who inspires you? Maybe it is your coach you just mentioned just then.
Yeah, she definitely inspires me. She's inspired me since I was 10 years old. She's not coaching me anymore, but she's definitely the person that I turn to whenever I think about what I'm doing in my life or am I on the right journey. I remember her words and her coaching, which was amazing. But I guess for me, the people that inspire me are the people I get to work with every day. I mean, I love looking up to elite runners and working with elite runners, but it's those people who not only do they train like an elite runner, they might not be at that level. They get up, they go to work, they have family, they have all these other things going on in their lives, but they still commit themselves to the sport. And I think to me, that's so much more inspiring, because as an elite, and I've lived the life of like, all you have to focus on is your running. You get to sleep during the day, you get to eat whenever you want, you get to go to the gym. Like it's fun, it's hard work. I get it. But you don't have the stress of a full-time job and the stress of maybe looking after a family and everything else that goes on to it. So the people that I work mostly day to day are your regular athletes who train because they love it. They might not be competing on a world stage, but they have so many other things going on in their lives, but they somehow manage to balance it all out. So I've been through that. I did work a full-time job and tried to train for marathons at the same time, and it just didn't work out well for me. So when I hear about all these athletes doing that, I'm super inspired by it, because I'm like, I want to work that hard and I want to be, committing myself to kind of many facets of my life, not just my running.
And you've taken or touched on a topic that we're going to talk about hopefully with you later, which is about when you were working that full-time job and training as much as you were at the time. But our last quick fire question for you is a quote which motivates you.
I think there's a really good quote. It came from Bill Bowman at Nike, and it went something like, everything you need is already inside. So I love that, because when it comes down to running, you know, like, your self-belief is the most important thing you could possibly have. If you don't believe in yourself, or you doubt yourself at all, then 100% what you want to do will never come true. So I'm a huge believer in the power of the mind, and thinking, you know, what you need to be successful as an athlete, especially, but anything really in life, you have that within you. You just need to fire it up and chase that dream. So I guess for me, yeah, like, believing in yourself is a huge part of it. It's probably why I love that quote.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, running itself is such an individual sport, isn't it? And always, like you say, if you're out on the track, like, it kind of comes down to you. Put all the hard work in. It's if your mind wants it more than the girl next to you. So firstly, I kind of want to talk to you about the fact that you had to quarantine recently for 2 weeks when you flew, obviously, back from Australia to New Zealand, because everyone's going through this very surreal time right now. You kind of kept it slightly interesting, didn't you? Tell us about quarantine and what it looked like for you.
Yeah, quarantine was something that I was probably dreading. I knew, like, I needed to come home, but the 2 weeks spending it in a hotel was something that I just really didn't want to do. But, you know, when you've got to prioritize what you want, I guess it was something I just sucked up, and I was like, I tried to look at quarantine as a challenge. I was like, you know, 2 weeks for me in a hotel room is going to be tough, but anything in life, I try to look at the positives and the silver linings. And so I was like, this is just going to be a really good challenge for me, A, because I'm not going to be able to run, but B, also just being stuck inside a motel room for anybody is going to be hard. So when I went over to New Zealand, you apply for quarantine, but you don't really have any say into what hotel you're going to get put into. I did put on my form when I went over that I was an athlete, but to be honest, I'm pretty sure they didn't even look at that or take consideration of that at all. I was just super fortunate to get put in a hotel that did allow us to go outside. So there are a lot of hotels in New Zealand, and I think majority of the hotels in Australia, they don't let you outside at all throughout the 2 weeks. So that would be horrific. And I was just so fortunate to get put into a hotel that had a car park and allowed us access to outside whenever we wanted. So once we kind of got to the hotel and realized that that was the situation we were in, it crossed my mind of like, all right, well, I have this car park. It's a 110-meter loop. how many loops do you think I can run throughout the 2 weeks? And I kind of was coming off a training block, so I kind of had prepped myself to be taking 2 weeks easy, and pretty much thought I wasn't going to run at all. But because we had this car park, I was like, well, at least I can just jog around, you know, for at least half an hour or maybe up to 60 minutes a day. And then a couple of days into quarantine, my boyfriend was like, oh, why don't you run a half marathon around the car park? And I had a couple of people message me on Instagram being like, how far can you run? And I was like, oh, now you've put this challenge to me. I am very competitive, so I can't run it fast, because there's no way you can run fast around a car park when you have to turn so often. But I'll see how far I can go. So I was very lucky that the hotel manager allowed me the time to be out there, because initially they were kind of a little bit hesitant for me to be running a half marathon wearing a mask, what medical restrictions might be in place. But they were okay with it. We got my photographer to come along and shoot it, and so we ended up running it. It was the first Saturday we were in quarantine, so it was like the halfway point for us, which was awesome. So really, like, kept me motivated the first week to keep jogging and then do the half marathon. And then I had another week in there where I could just kind of chill. It ended up being, I can't remember how many laps it was now.
191. 764 turns. I've got it all.
191 laps. So it was fun. I think challenging in parts I didn't expect it to be challenging in. I thought it was going to be really hard from, say, K18 to K20, 21, but it was actually more tough around the K10 to K13 mark, maybe up to 15 Ks, because I guess that halfway point, you're just like, so monotonous and you're just going around and around and around. But it definitely kept me motivated to keep running throughout quarantine, and it also just gave me something to focus on and keep me distracted when we have not much else going on.
I can picture at the end as well, like everyone else who was at the hotel, like coming out and cheering, socially distance, of course, because you just said you were going to take pretty much 2 weeks off. In the end, you end up doing about 150K, which is about like 90 odd miles, and 1,363 laps to total that car park. You know that car park better than anybody else in the world. Yes, you're officially slightly nuts, but that's why you're here. We love it.
Yeah, I think most people are like, oh, that's so motivating, you're so amazing. I'm like, no, I think I'm just obsessed and crazy.
Yeah, we all are. That's why we all kind of come together. It's fine.
I loved watching that. But Lydia, we want to go back to where it all began. So we understand that you started running when you were just 7 years old. Is that right? And
yeah, so I started running, yeah, I was about 7 or 8 at an athletics club in my hometown. And I think as a kid, I was one of those kids who just wanted to do everything. I kind of like nagged at my mum to do every single sport I could possibly do. She was running around after me. So I was pretty lucky to have parents who were really supportive. And at that time, I was actually really focused on dance. So I did ballet and jazz pretty seriously as a child. I danced for about 10 years. And when I started running, and probably up until the age of about 12, I dreamt of being a professional ballerina. Like that was kind of my goal and something that I just strived for. And it wasn't until I really hit, you know, in my teenage years that I started, I guess, paying more attention to running and being brought on by that amazing coach that I spoke about, and having her to kind of guide me, I realized that running really lit me up in the competitions and the races and the travel we got to do. I guess from there, I decided that running was probably more of a priority to me than ballet, and ballet eventually started slipping away, probably because I just got super tight and wasn't as flexible as I should have been from all the running. But yeah, running was definitely something that just inspired me to not only be like a better athlete, but a better all-round person. I think it definitely gave me this pathway to focus on myself. I think, as we said, running is quite a selfish sport, but I don't think there's anything wrong with being selfish. I think being selfish is a good thing, because once you kind of get yourself in the best position you can be in, you can look after everyone else and do the right things for everyone else around you. So I guess for me, running not only was that kind of tool to be a really good athlete, but it was to be a better person as well. So throughout high school, I just, I ran for the school. We went to nationals, we competed, but we had such an amazing team that I just got to really thrive in that social element as well. And I think that's why I probably loved it so much. All my friends ran as well, and we'd go away on trips. And my coach, she coached us so well to be good, but we weren't amazing. And I think that's like, that was the element of holding us back at points. And so we'd go to nationals and we'd win as a team, which was amazing, but we'd never have an individual winning or podium on the podium. So I think running for me all through my school years was just like a really fun social thing that I did that also kept me fit and healthy, both physically and mentally.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually quite interesting, because you kind of think, well, you need that success. Obviously, you had it as a team to kind of want to continue, because some people would maybe drop out if they hadn't got that success. But obviously, a testament to the fact that it does work. Patience is key. But was there a point in, I guess, since you were 13, that you kind of ever fell out of running a little bit? Or has it always been a constant since you kind of decided it was for you, that it's been in your life ever since?
Yeah, I run pretty competitively through school. And then when I left high school in New Zealand, I actually got given the opportunity to go to Texas in America on a scholarship. And so a lot of Kiwis go over there, and Australians go on these athletic scholarships to the States to run for universities over there. And I'm sure it's probably similar for you guys.
Yeah.
And so I was given this amazing opportunity, but I was only 17 at the time. And the first time I was leaving home was to travel to the other side of the world by myself to a university where I knew nobody. And so it was a huge move for me, and something I was meant to be committing to for 4 years. It was a 4-year scholarship, which is incredible really when you think about it. But now I look back, I was just, I think, probably too immature for the situation. I both in my running career, but also in my age and where I was in my life, I coming from a school where I had just run really because I loved it and it was fun, to this environment where you had to perform and you had to train to a certain level and you had to really prove yourself. It was pretty early on that I realized it wasn't really what I wanted to be doing at that time in my life. And so I also got quite sick over there and homesick. So I only ended up spending about 6 weeks in Texas till I decided that I needed to come home. So it was an expensive 6 weeks just to fly there and back. I came home and ended up just stepping away from the sport for a while. I think being at such a young age and opening my eyes up to the world of this like competitive sport of running, especially in an American university, it kind of steered me away from the sport a little bit. I guess the pressure I felt when I was over there wasn't a pressure that I really wanted at that time. So I thought coming back to New Zealand, I thought, you know, maybe running isn't for me. And I ended up stopping running for about 18 months and kind of went down a pretty, I wouldn't say typical, but pathway that I would say many teenagers find themselves in, where they are, you know, maybe not quite sure who they are, aren't 100% confidence in who they are as people. I ended up just partying and not doing the right things at that time that I should have been doing. But I think it was a really good time for me to kind of grow up and really find myself again. And it was running after 18 months, it was running that drew me back into the right pathway. I think I realized how good running did make me feel and how living a healthy lifestyle and having goals and ambitions was what I needed in my life to be mentally healthy. And I found myself in a pretty dark place at that time where I just lost complete touch of who I was and kind of just got sucked into this world that I didn't belong in. And so knowing that I needed running in my life drew me back into the right pathway. And by doing that, I kind of let go of that crazy teenage life that I was living and made some really big changes in my life to kind of chase the dream of running. And I think it was only about a year later, I ended up a year later of training, I ended up podiuming. I think I won the national junior 5K. So being able to kind of give myself 12 months to get fit and get fast again and then go to nationals and win a national title really proved to me that, you know, if you put in the hard work and you chase these dreams, they can come true. You just need to A, believe in yourself, and B, commit yourself to that, because without doing that, I don't think you'll get anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of can take what you said there and put it into my life a little bit. So when I was a younger athlete, I was kind of mentored by Dame Kelly Holmes. And again, she kind of really resonated with me because she took such a big break from sport and came back to win her medals at the age of 34. Unfortunately for me, I kind of took the break and never came back again, but it still kind of showed me that actually, you know, you have to find your own path and it doesn't have to mirror everyone else's, and, you know, you can come back to it whenever you like. But Lydia, I saw actually something on your website, on your blog, and was the time you just mentioned about when you kind of, you know, fell out of love with running and took a different path or all, was it the same time as when you basically said that, you know, through your 20s, you wanted to be a super successful person? You wanted to have the career, you wanted to be a well-known runner, but then you were burning the candles at both ends. Was that the same kind of time? And if so, I guess, how did you actually come back to it? How did you find it again? And how did you change what success looked like?
Yeah, so it was a different time. So when I stepped away from running as a teenager and came back to it when I was about 19 years old, I didn't have too much else going on in my life. I just started university, and I think running was something that I just wanted to kind of keep me, you know, sane. And then once I'd come out of university, this would have been like 4 or 5 years later, I ended up working in a big corporation, and I was chasing these big dreams of, I guess, job titles and being successful. I really thought at that time, in my early 20s, I really thought earning a lot of money and having a particular job title was seen as successful. And I wanted more than anything was to be successful. Like, that was the one thing I wanted to show people and probably prove to others, not even myself, prove to others that I was worthy of success. And so I chased these dreams and these goals of climbing the corporate ladder to get a particular job title, to be earning a certain amount of money just to prove to everyone else that I was successful, which now I look back on it and I'm just almost embarrassed about it, because it's just so far from reality and so far from how people should be living their lives. And so I guess for about 5 years, I really put my head down. I was trying to train for marathons. I was trying to climb this corporate ladder. I had a very stressful, stressful job, which required me to be up all hours of the night working and long days. And then on top of that, I was trying to coach high schools and run my own coaching business. So it ended up just being such an overload of work that it just completely burnt me out. And I guess I had so many people, and I have so many people, amazing people in my life who were trying to tell me to slow down. And I think as females, we're all so driven that, and I guess we all feel like we can multitask and do so many different things. And I think I wanted to be that, you know, strong woman, independent woman who can do everything. And I really thought that I could until I couldn't. And I guess I remember it would have been probably a year before I ended up quitting my job. I knew that I wasn't doing the right thing, and I knew for my health and for my running especially, it wasn't the right path that I should be on, and I shouldn't be working these long hours. And if I really wanted to run well, and I was training like an elite, but I wasn't living an elite lifestyle, I shouldn't be working these long hours, and I should be looking after my body and my mind a lot better. And then it took me about a year, because to be honest, I was working my dream job, and to a lot of people, they would be, you know, they would think I was stupid to quit this job because it was a dream. Like it was a job that when I set out for it, when I was 22, I said, in 5 years, I want this job. And I ended up getting it. I ended up getting the role that I dreamt of. And once I got there, I realized it kind of wasn't what I wanted to do or be in that place. So I remember looking in the mirror one day and just being so tired, and my body was breaking down. I my internals were so unhealthy. My skin was terrible. I wasn't sleeping at nighttime. I had like this twitching eye that twitched for 6 months straight. So it's just all the signs of fatigue and stress, but I just completely ignored them for so long, until one day I just said, I can't do this anymore, and ended up going to work that day and just calling my boss, because I worked remotely, and telling him that I couldn't do it and I needed to quit. And I think it was a bit of a shock, because no one really saw it coming, because it was such an amazing role, but it just wasn't the right role for me at that time of my life. So I ended up pretty much being suffering from chronic fatigue, and I suffered pretty severely for a while. I'd say it took about 6 months of a lot of bed rest to feel somewhat normal, but I didn't feel myself for another 18 months. So it really affected my training. And it was just silly, because I look back on it and I was training so hard, but I wasn't getting the results. So it was pretty much all the training I was doing was just pointless, because I wasn't doing all the other things that I needed to be doing to be running at the level I should have been. So it's been a huge shift for me. For I think I'd say the last 2 years now, I've been feeling a lot better and being able to train properly, recover properly, and understand how important recovery is has just been huge for me. Looking after my body and working with my female physiology and then actually seeing the results has just been so satisfying, because I now know that I am doing the right things to kind of get to where I want to be.
I think that's a really common story. And I mean, I think it's probably happened to myself, even though I probably don't realize it. But there was a stage where I was waking up at 5, coming home at 10, training for a marathon. Like, I was exhausted. I did the marathon. I didn't perform. But I guess, Lydia, is that why running for you is not just physical? Because you talk a lot about this on your social media and on your blogs and on various things. I want to quote something from your Instagram. It says, "I don't run to race. I don't race for my ego. I race to see how far I can push myself, to see what my mind and body are truly capable of. I run for the joy of moving, and I run for my mental health. The times and medals are memories, but the experiences of happiness will last forever. That's why I run." What about you?
That is 100% right. Yeah. I think running for times and for placings and to make teams and to, you know, compete on the world stage, it's amazing. But to me, it is much more of a job. I think if I ran for that, I would see it much more as something that I have to do rather than something I want to do. And I run for my mental health because I want to get up each day and I want to be happy in myself that day. And I know if I go out first thing in the morning and exercise, whether it's an easy run or a 3-hour run, I know finishing that run, I'm going to feel so much better about myself. I'm going to feel so much more confident, and I'm going to have a much better day by doing that than if I didn't. So, you know, it might be just one day at a time where I'm saying, if I go for a run tomorrow, I'm going to feel good throughout that day. But you layer those days upon days upon days, and then months and then years, and you end up creating a completely different life that you wouldn't have had if you didn't start running. And the way that it creates like purpose and direction for you is just huge. And I've seen, you know, athletes that I've worked with and people that I've been surrounded by who maybe used to run and then fell out of love with it, or they may have overtrained and they trained purely at that time for times and placings, but because their intention to running wasn't the right intention, they didn't continue running, and then they completely lost themselves, lost their pathway, and lost their direction in life. So I think if we can all, elite athletes included, all flip our thinking towards the sport and why we do it, and understand if we do it to create a life of happiness for ourselves, I think we'll all enjoy it much more. And I think we'll have these huge flow and effects throughout our life that, yeah, we just wouldn't have if we didn't run.
Yeah, actually, that kind of brings me on to something that you mentioned in the quickfire questions at the beginning, where you kind of said, you know, your greatest achievement, sorry, was Melbourne, your first marathon 2015, I think it was. And you kind of, you know, for anyone who completes a marathon, you said they should be super proud. But we had the ultra running legend Dean Karnassus on the podcast in series one. And he basically said that he thinks everyone on the planet should run a marathon because of the effects that running a marathon has on you, not only physically, but mentally. I just wanted to get your view on that as well, because obviously you just said that you're a big advocate for the fact that running improves your mental health. Can you relate to that legend's words?
Oh, 100%. I remember saying this. I think I said it maybe like 10 years ago. I remember saying something to someone, you know, if everybody ran, the world would be a much happier place.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I think, you know, I understand some people like physically cannot run, and that's unfortunate. But I think any form of movement is amazing. But running is just the most accessible form of movement that we have. So I think running a marathon is a huge feat for anybody, and I don't disagree with him, but I think my problem probably as a coach is people jumping into marathons too early just to run a marathon. So I think everybody definitely should run, and if they want to run a marathon, take your time, be gradual, get there slowly. Don't just say, you know, I just have to run a marathon in, you know, a few months because that's on my bucket list. I think that's one thing that I struggle to work around with athletes. I'm like, patience, you know, train for your 5K first and then for your 10K. And then next year we'll train for a half marathon. And then maybe 2 years later we'll do a marathon. But yeah, I think everybody can do a marathon. I mean, I've worked with, you know, over 60-year-olds who have run their first marathon, which has been amazing and inspiring for me. But yeah, it's that taking the time to do it, but definitely everybody should run.
Definitely. And I think especially in the world that we're living in at the moment with lockdowns and everything that's going on, running has really come through and it's been so accessible for many, which is amazing to see. But Lydia, you have set up a company recently, Femi, which is a coaching company that you've set up. Can you tell us about this and the philosophies behind it?
Yeah. So I set up Femi. We've been working on it for probably about 4 or 5 months now. And we launched it just over a month ago. So Femi is a female coaching service we have female coaches working with female athletes, all based on their female physiology. So I've been super interested around female physiology and how women should be training to their menstrual cycles and really taking into account our hormone fluctuations, because it's something that I've kind of struggled with over the last 10 years of training quite seriously, and something that I've felt the effects of, but never understood why. So it wasn't until, I would say, about a year ago, I got really invested into Dr. Stacey Sims' work. So I'm not sure if you've heard of Dr. Stacey Sims, but she's an amazing scientist who's actually based here in New Zealand, actually in my hometown, which is awesome. And she has done a lot of research around female physiology and how we should be taking into account all of these changes in our sex hormones when we are kind of approaching our training and our nutrition and our recovery. Stacey's whole slogan is around women not being small men. And a lot of the research, I can't remember, there's a crazy percentage of how much research around athletes is done on males, and they kind of just take it over to females and apply the same theories and philosophies to female athletes as they do for males. And the reason behind that is because males are much easier to study because they don't have these hormone fluctuations. So scientists have always kind of just turned to using males over females when they're doing any sorts of studies because they don't need to deal with the cycle or periods or, you know, progesterone, estrogen fluctuations. So because of that, Stacey spent her life kind of figuring out how women should be training and how they should be eating and recovering. And I ended up doing her course at the start of the year, which I just absolutely loved and have just found so interesting learning all the differences between the male and the female physiologies and how we should be approaching our training. So FEMI is all about this, and we're working with females, very closely with females, and all the training that we are providing is all purely based on the menstrual cycle. So it's something that's quite new. I'm not sure to how many other, like, female coaches, especially around running, are doing it, but it's going to be super interesting, especially seeing the results in a year's time. I think it's something that I've been following for probably the last year around my cycle and how best to train to it. And I've definitely seen results. So I'm really, really excited for females, not only to kind of get the results when they're racing and when they're time trialing out on the road, but to feel better within themselves. I think too often do we go out to a training session or a race and have a terrible day and blame ourselves and our fitness and our training for it. And we don't understand that maybe we're not, you know, in the best phase of our cycle to be racing or to be training at these intensities. And that's not to say, you know, if you are in a phase of your cycle that isn't perfect for a race, we obviously can't change the race of the day, the date of the race, but we can do things to kind of eliminate maybe some PMS symptoms or better recover. Or, you know, it's more about how we can train right for that race based on where our hormones are at and the build up to the race. So it's super interesting, and I've really enjoyed working with the athletes we've got on board so far. I think they are just so willing and open to learn, and it's good because the athletes are so trusting in us, and that if we say to them, you know, this week we're not going to do a workout or a hard session because your hormones are high, you might not recover as well. A lot of athletes would freak out, being like, no, I need to do my speed session. But the girls we've got on board are awesome, and they just fully trust us and know that we're doing the right things for them. So yeah, it's awesome, and I'm super excited to see where it can go.
I think it's amazing what you're doing, and I know both Rach and I have loved reading about the work that you've been doing, and one of the things that we both have read and discussed, which we learned from you, was about when actually is a good time to train hard in the female menstrual cycle. Would you mind just explaining a little bit around that and the science?
Yeah, sure. So in the menstrual cycle, we've got two main phases. We've got our follicular phase and then our luteal phase. So our follicular phase is usually on a normal cycle, I'd say normal quotation marks, like a 28-day cycle. I know every female is different, but if we're going off that 28-day cycle, our follicular phase is days 1 to 14, so the first 2 weeks, and then our luteal phase is days 15 to 28. And so during those first 2 weeks of our period, or our menstrual cycle, we're obviously going to have our bleed being from day 1, and this is when our hormones are at their lowest. So when our hormones are at their lowest, I would say we're much more like a male. So with our progesterone and estrogen low, we can perform higher. So usually, and I mean, it's very common for females to be like, oh, I've got my period or I'm bleeding and I need to take it easy. I need to pull back the intensity and maybe just go for a walk today. FEMI is complete opposite to that. It's like, you've got your period. All right, we're going to go hard. Like, this is where we want to push the intensities, because you can reach these intensities a lot easier. We can access our carbohydrate storage a lot easier. We can recover a lot easier. We can build lean muscle a lot easier during these times because of the low estrogen and progesterone in our systems. So usually from days 1 to 14, through Femi and through my own coaching business, I usually only give one speed session a week, but these speed sessions will be high intensity. So it might be K reps or mile reps or 3 or 4 minute reps where we're going to go really fast with short recoveries. And then when we flip it to the luteal phase, where we do have high estrogen and progesterone, where our hormones are climbing before they drop off until we go back into our follicular phase, this is when we need to take it a little bit easier. It's the phase where we can't recover as quickly. So we need to make sure we aren't pushing our bodies too hard. We need to sleep more. We need to kind of focus more on like the food elements, so eating more anti-inflammatory foods. But yeah, it's pulling back in training, it's pulling back the intensity and maybe focusing a little bit more on mileage versus how hard can you go in a session, because we all know if we push ourselves 100% in training, there's no point to that, because you're going to end up in a pretty bad place or a pretty So it's kind of pulling back that intensity, allow the body to recover. And over months and months of kind of training to these theories and these cycles, you're kind of just layering and layering and laying on top, making the most of the first 2 weeks of your cycle and then pulling it back in the last 2 weeks.
I mean, I think it's so important as well to have more female coaches, because growing up, I was coached by, a man and female partnership, but it still wasn't the same because it was kind of dominated by the male. And then at university, it was also a man. Amana was the same, like guys.
Always men.
And yeah. I think like for you to do that and actually have the empathy that females also need and you can relate to them and vice versa, I think is super important. But if you guys are interested as well, go on Lydia's Instagram page, Lydia Odio, and she's got a little Femi bit on her story highlights, so you can find out some more information as well. And we'll put the link for you guys to check out that as well, because we think it's super important.
Thanks. Yeah, I think the male coaching thing is a big one. I think it's definitely something going to change in the future. But something that probably frustrates me the most is male coaches who don't understand the cycle and then force their athletes to go on something like the oral contraception pill, which is going to actually manipulate their cycle and may make not allow them to have a period when they are racing, which they see as a good thing. But they don't understand kind of the detriments of putting an athlete on the OCP. So that's probably something that frustrates me more than anything.
I never, ever knew that. So I feel like I'm learning so much from you about this. It is so interesting.
But we have had a couple of guests actually on in series one again who had quite a lot of problems which kind of came from that and then led to them having, you know, lower bone density and a lot of different injuries. So it is very important and something needs to be spoken about more and not a taboo subject. But I want to kind of, I know it's really important, but I really want to get on to talking about something that we are obsessed with, Amana and I.
Yeah,
and that obsessed. Is, obsessed, the Speed Project 5.0. Okay, I'm going to set the scene. We are going to go. For the first time for Speed Project, obviously LA, it's running from LA to Vegas. It's like 550K through the desert. You go through Death Valley and you end up at the Las Vegas sign with a group of cool people, whoever you decide to take, in an RV, like it's kind of a relay race. You've done it twice, but I want your story of 5.0 and how awesome your team was, and tell us about it because I'm jealous.
Yeah. Honestly, it was the most incredible experience I've had in my life. It is just the coolest race. And
that makes it even worse, by the way. Don't big it up too much, just like a little bit.
I'm sorry. I'm sure you girls will get to experience it at some point. And it's honestly life-changing. Like when I first went to the Speed Project for 4.0, I kind of had no idea what I was getting myself into. And to be honest, I didn't even really know my teammates. And I was kind of just going over there to throw myself in the deep end because I love a challenge. And I walked away from that race just being like, that I can never look at life the same. Like, it sounds crazy because it's just a running race, but what you go through in that 35 to 40 hours, whatever it is that you run, is just honestly changes your perception on everything. Like just the way that you A, appreciate running, but B, appreciate relationships, the world, everything you see is just so crazy out there. So when I went back for 5.0, we decided to enter the race with an all-girls team. So there are three categories within the race. There is an OG team, which is four boys and two girls. There is an all-women's team, or you can enter with as many girls or boys you want. So the cool thing about the Speed Project is that there are no rules. There is no specific route to take. You can take whatever way you want. You just have to get from the LA from LA to the Vegas sign as fast as you possibly can on foot. And so when we went back for 5.0 with an all-girls team, at that time, I think I only knew half the team. So there was three girls, myself, plus two others that we obviously knew each other. And then there were three girls that I hadn't really met before. And so we didn't actually come together as a team until the night before the race. That was the first time we really all met. And it was one of those things you're like, man, you just really hope that these girls are cool, because you have to spend so many hours in a van very close to them. And if they're not, it's going to be an issue. And I was just so, so fortunate to have such an incredible team. The girls in my team, we were all very similar. We all obviously loved running, loved a challenge, pushing ourselves, but we were also quite, I guess, tomboyish. We just like loved just, I don't know, being with each other and building each other up was probably the biggest thing for our team. It was amazing to see kind of the epitome of female empowerment throughout those 35 hours of us running, because we were all so behind each other, which was awesome. And so we took off from LA. I think I was the first runner in the race. And so there's obviously six of us, but because there are no rules, you can run however far you want every leg. So some people started out with 10K legs, some people started out with 5K legs. And I think we started out with fives, but there were teams doing 1K legs. Like everyone had their own kind of tactics, which is awesome. So we started with 5Ks and we did that for a few hours. And then I think we switched down to maybe like 2Ks at a time. Broke it down to get a little bit shorter so we could go a little bit faster. And these girls were incredible. Like I really didn't know how talented they were or how fit they were or how fast they were going to run. But every single one of them just ran so consistently and so strong, were so strong throughout the entire race. And I purely think it was because we had each other. We knew, you know, I knew every other girl on my team were pushing themselves to the max. So of course I'm going to do that as well. And then I think it's about like evening, dusk, sunset sort of time when you hit the desert. And so for those who don't know, we run from LA to Vegas, but you have to run partway through Death Valley. So before you get to Death Valley, you run through a desert. And at this point, you can't have a car or any supporting vehicle with you because you're running through a desert where there is no roads. And it's the only part of the race that you can't have a support vehicle, and it just happens to be the night legs. So you're running through this Death Valley desert, crazy times, coyotes, snakes, everything's out there with you. You are potentially could be by yourself. We were very lucky that we had a few boys crewing for us who jumped in and ran some of the night legs with us through the desert. But that's definitely the hardest and scariest part of the whole race. I think there were seven night legs, and we each got one leg. Each athlete got one leg through the desert, and we had an amazing girl, Michaela, who ended up taking two of the legs for us. She's an ultra runner and just incredible and strong. So she jumped in and did an extra leg for us. But yeah, I think that was definitely the scariest part of it. And then coming through the next day, it's like 4 or 5 a.m., you've been running for at least 24 hours at this point, super tired. The sun is rising over the desert and it's just the most serene environment. It's just like absolutely beautiful as the sun's coming up. You're out there, just your RV and you, because there's no other teams around you. And I think from there, we're so motivated to just push it home. We had a pretty crazy experience because we were competing to try and be one of the top teams. So we ended up taking some hidden routes, which makes it pretty exciting.
Sneaky. Yeah. Sneaky, yeah.
So there is a suggested map to take, but because the whole thing about Speed Project, there are no rules, you can take whichever way you want. So we had some pretty nifty little hacks throughout the race, and we had a couple of people go ahead and kind of check out the tracks before we ran them. But at one point, we actually couldn't get through the road. So we ran for, I think it was about 13 miles or maybe Ks up a road, and then realized that we couldn't actually get through it. I think the runner could get through, but the car at that time couldn't come through. So the person would have ended up running like a marathon because there was no way to switch over runners. So we ended up having to actually turn back. And at that point, when we turned off to take this hack, we were in first for the females and third overall. So we were pretty...
That's insane.
But once we had to turn around and to go back to the original course, we got back and I think we were sitting in like 13th or something. And I've never been so disheartened in my life. I was absolutely like on the verge of tears, but I was captain, so I also needed to pull it together and make a plan. And so we got back on the original course and we were like, you know what, we're just going to keep running. Like the pace we're running, we'll definitely pick up a few runners, but I don't think we're going to be able to get back up to the position we were in. And so I guess it was that time the strength of our team really shone through, because no one got angry, no one took it out on anyone else. We all just pulled together and were like, let's just keep going. And so my heart was just sinking and sinking. And then we started picking up runners as we were going. And by morning time, I think we maybe were sitting fifth or something. But we still had a girls team ahead of us, which was obviously our main goal, was to win the female category. And we actually found another hack that went in a complete different direction to the original course that goes over the hill into Vegas. So it was a huge risk and one that I was very on the fence about taking. But once everyone else kind of agreed, let's try it. You know, we've got nothing to lose. Let's just go for it. We ended up running through the sand, and I think it must have been, at least 5 or 6 Ks of us doing 200-meter repeats. So one girl would jump out, sprint for 200 meters on the sand because it was so soft, you couldn't go.
I love that. Yeah.
200 meters. And then we'd like fly past her in the van. The next runner would jump out, tag, go again. And it was like these skinny little roads and the van's almost hitting the runner as it flies past. It was just hilarious, but so fun.
I was going to say, I wanted to use your map, but now I'm not so sure because kind of didn't really work out. It was kind of trial and error and it kind of, did in the end work out for you, didn't it?
Well, it did work out for us in the end. We ended up coming, getting out of that kind of section and getting over the hill into Vegas and coming in third place overall. So it did work out for us. It got us first place in the female category. I think we must have won by at least an hour or something.
I think, Lydia, you're being super modest here. You came first out of the females, but you actually hold the female record now for the Speed Project, which is 37 hours or so. And I have to admit now, Rachel and I looked at your record because we wanted that record, but I don't know how you did it. It's 4 minute per K pace, 650 a mile pace. Like, yeah, you're super modest here.
I think we ended up averaging 4 minute Ks, which is, it's pretty insane when you think about it.
Yeah, for 37 hours, that is insane. Through the desert, in the heat, through the night. I don't know how you did it. Rachel and I have had many discussions about this.
We've watched everything there is to watch and we've like gone through maps and like listened to all these podcasts with like Bex Gentry like talking about it, like where's that sneaky path? Like where is it? But anyway, we don't know if we're going to do it.
I don't know if anyone will be sharing their maps. It's all pretty secret.
I know, exactly. But I don't know if we're going to do it next year because we're allowed to do it next year, but obviously we're not sure about flights into America or out of America. So it's kind of still like pending. But after again hearing your story of it, just sounds so incredible. So we really, it's a must on our bucket list at some point. But Lydia, before we let you go, what is next for you? I know obviously it's a little bit kind of difficult right now to say that, but Yeah, obviously Olympics didn't happen this year. Was that in the plan? Commonwealth 2022, where are you heading?
Yeah, it's hard to say. At the moment, I'm just focusing on getting back into some really good training and building up a good block. I've actually got a 5K. But yeah, I guess the goal for me next year is probably something I haven't really discussed too often with other people, is chasing after the Olympic dream. I guess I've had so many opportunities in the past that I have kind of gone all in and it hasn't worked out for me, and I've been super disappointed by that. So it is scary to say that's something that I want to continue to chase. But yeah, talking to my coach this week, he's pretty confident and adamant that I should be going after it next year for the marathon. So we're just putting a plan together to kind of maybe race April, a marathon in New Zealand, to try and qualify. So if things go well, it'll be awesome. But I just don't want to get my hopes up too high at this point.
Lydia, thank you so much for your time today. We have honestly loved speaking to you. We love what you're about. We love your ethos. And I can't wait to continue to watch your training journey. And I hope you do make that Olympic team.
Thank you. It's been awesome to chat to you guys. Thank you for having me. It's great just to, chat running all the time. So if you guys want to talk again, definitely let me know.
And also follow Lydia on Instagram. Her pictures are so cool. They make me jealous. I've been following you for a while now. And literally, how do you look so great all the time? You must have the best photographer. Obviously, you're stunning as well. But I'm like, oh my days, this girl.
Great photographers around me, yes.
Oh, Lydia, thank you so much. And yeah, very jealous. You're now in summer in New Zealand. We're in the depths of winter. We're about to go into lockdown. And you're not. But yeah, thank you so much for your time once again.
No worries.
Thank you.
Well, it was so great to have a guest on here with us all the way from New Zealand. I mean, that's probably why we had a few technical difficulties. Anyway, I love that Lydia is not only kind of striving to be the best in her field, but she's also striving to be the best at helping other athletes grow and develop in the running world as well. And I think her work with Femi is just second to none. And something which I think, you know, young female athletes growing up should be so grateful that she's trying to kind of educate them. You know, looking back at my running career as a young female, I wish I had more access and knowledge about the things that Lydia spoke about in the podcast today. It would have made me a completely better athlete and runner all around.
Definitely. But unfortunately, that is all we've got time for this week. So thanks for listening. And if you want to follow me, I'm at @Amana_Rye.
And I'm at @Rachel_Stringer.
And until next week, keep running.